Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
3, 2, 1.
But I've worked it out. I love to listen to your podcast.
Whenever you say something, other people react to it.
Taking my breath away, Aaron.
Fern Lundquist joins me.
Hall Welcome in, everybody.
Jim Calhoun,
to a Sunday
NASCAR
night.
Icon, Dale
Monday morning edition
Earnhardt
of the Air Tour
Jr.
Sports Podcast.
Kirk
I am your host, Aaron Torres. Hope everybody's doing well. Hope everybody is having a great evening. And hope everybody has enjoyed just an awesome 4 days of basketball. We have so much to get into. This is the Sunday night reaction show, Monday morning on podcast, but there is so much to discuss here going forward. We're going to talk the latest on John Calipari. I think when we signed off Thursday, we thought nothing was really going to change. I'm starting to wonder if he's actually going to be back as the head coach of Kentucky. We'll talk about Louisville getting spurned by Dusty May, who was very much their number one target and priority. And then we are going to get into just a bananas weekend in college basketball. It is worth noting two games are going on as I am recording here. It's about 7:30 Pacific, 10:30 Eastern time. Houston with just a 5-point lead on Texas A&M. San Diego State up 10 early in the final game of Sunday. So we got ourselves a jam-packed wall-to-wall reaction show. I don't know how long we're going to be on here for, but I am so excited to break down the entire weekend of college basketball with you. Everybody come on in. If you're watching on YouTube, if you're watching on Twitter, drop your comments in the YouTube chat. First of all, if you're going on Twitter, come on YouTube, join the party there. Drop your comments as well. Before we get into today's show, a couple quick things. First of all, do want to thank our sponsor on our Aaron Torres Pod Bracket Challenge, Bracket Fanatics. So Bracket Fanatics, hopefully y'all signed up. Hopefully y'all are competing against me. My bracket's still largely in pretty good shape, with, of course, the exception of the Kentucky Wildcats, who I did take to go to the Final Four. But Bracket Fanatics is awesome. We have loved working with them. This is now the fourth straight year that we have worked with them. We are giving away $1,000 in cash prizes. And remember, Bracket Fanatics is the spot you want to go to for all of your bracket needs. NCAA tournament, they do NFL pick'em. They're going to do college football pick'em next year. If you want to run your own bracket, remember Bracket Fanatics, they collect the money for you. You can sign up, start your own pool going forward. So you sign up, you get your friends to sign up, and from there you could drop your money in. They distribute your money, everything like that. So thank you to Bracket Fanatics. Should mention, through Sunday, we have two leaders atop the board after action on Saturday. This will be updated shortly after the games on Sunday, but want to give credit to DSteel08 and K Dennis, who are tied atop the standings with 49 total points going into the final couple games on Sunday. Again, we are giving away $1,000 in cash prizes courtesy of Bracket Fanatics. Cannot thank them enough for their support. Really quickly, also want to thank our partners, BetUS Sportsbook and the BetUS Sportsbook app. Listen, we've been working with them all March long. Appreciate BetUS. And as I've said all along, by the way, gave out a winner this morning. I said UConn minus 13.5 is a joke. They covered it with ease. Hopefully you tailed that one. But BetUS has been an awesome partner for us all March long. And they have the best offer going right now on the net. I hope you guys are taking advantage of it. I know many of you are. BetUS has appreciated your guys' support of the Aaron Torres pod. But here is the offer that BetUS has right now. They are offering, how about this, 125% deposit match on your first three deposits, okay? So you signed up for BetUS. You deposited 100 bucks. They give you 125. Now let's say, God forbid, on Thursday, you blew it all betting Kentucky against Oakland, or on Friday, Auburn against Yale. Well, guess what? You lose it, deposit another 100, they'll give you another 125. Maybe you lost it on Sunday, betting Grand Canyon against Bama. They'll give you another 125% deposit on your first three deposits. Thank you to BetUS. We love working with them. We are so grateful. And there is so much to be grateful for this time of year, because college hoops is loaded and there is so much to discuss on tonight's show. So with that said, I'll tell you what, let's not waste any more time. Let's not skip any more anything else. And let's get to a wild weekend in college hoops. And what I want to do, what we're going to do, is we are going to talk about everything that happened in the tournament over the next, you know, hour or so. But what I want to start with is actually two coaching notes from the weekend. And the first one, I'll tell you, you know, I'm starting to think there might be a little bit more smoke to this John Calipari situation than we initially thought on Thursday. All right, so as a backstory, very quickly, I want to get people updated here, because obviously, look, the story probably of the tournament, even still now at 10:30 Eastern time on Sunday, it remains the Kentucky Wildcats. Do you know that with the NCAA tournament, we are now basically at the Elite Eight? Assuming Houston wins, all four number one seeds will have advanced. All four number two seeds will advance. Two of the four three seeds will advance. The only ones that didn't were Baylor and the University of Kentucky. The only top three seed that got upset in the opening round was Kentucky. And so we talked about it on Thursday. I'm not going to go through what happened on Thursday. You know that. But what I found interesting was this, was that I woke up on Friday and Calipari was the big news and the big story and the big this and the big that. And then something interesting happened. The game started, Florida Atlantic loses to Northwestern, you know, San Diego State beats UAB, whatever. And the Calipari story starts to go away. And it was funny because I thought by probably about, you know, 6, 7, 8 o'clock at night on Friday, it kind of hit me. I was like, that was such a big story in the moment. And I kind of feel like there's really not going to be anything that's going to happen. Like, we're just going to go on with the tournament. We're going to forget about this. And then in like a month, something is going to happen at Kentucky. And we're going to be like, oh crap, Calipari's still the head coach. Remember when they lost to Oakland? Remember how embarrassing that was? And so I bring it up because it felt to me like nothing was going to happen. Then I woke up on Saturday to a very cryptic tweet, excuse me, from my buddy Matt Jones, Kentucky Sports Radio. Producer Matt flashed that tweet on the screen for everybody to see. Matt Jones tweeted out, I want to say it was about noon Eastern on Saturday. You can see it here. Here is the UK basketball situation as it stands right now. The decision is all in Mitch Barnhart's hands. Mitch Barnhart is the AD. I get the sense that if he decides he wants to move on, the money will be there for reasons Andy Staples described in his video yesterday. I'll explain that momentarily. There is a sense of nervousness with everyone around the program because no one is really sure where Barnhart's mind is right now. I am told the university leadership is supportive of whatever he decides. I think we know something by Monday, if not before. All right, so it is obviously, as of right now, it is 10:30 Eastern time on Sunday. Unless I've missed something in the last 5 minutes, we are probably not going to know something by Monday. But to reference Matt's tweet, so first of all, what Matt's tweet is basically saying is this, is that I think we all came out of Thursday sitting there saying, you know, that loss was really bad, but there's no, like Kentucky would owe John Calipari $33 million in buyout money, and there is no way any school is going to pay that for a head coach. Plus, of course, you got to pay out the assistants. You got to pay out, a new head coach you're obviously going to have to pay. If it's a sitting head coach, you're going to have to pay his buyout. And so I think we all thought that Kentucky was just going to come back and it was going to be business as usual. Well, what Matt's tweet basically said was two things. Was one,
the money isn't as big of an issue as we thought. And he referenced an Andy Staples video. Okay. And in the Andy Staples video, Andy Staples from On3 actually talked a lot about what we have talked about on this show over probably the last, 4 to 5 weeks, right? Is that everyone gets infatuated with buyout money, and understandably so, but rarely is there a situation where when we're talking about tens of millions of dollars, now if it's $2 million, $5 million, whatever, that's a different story. But when a coach is owed tens of millions of dollars, very rarely does it all have to be paid out if you fire him the day that he gets fired. I've referenced Jimbo Fisher a bunch, right? Everybody said you can't fire Jimbo Fisher, $76 million on the buyout. And then all of a sudden you start to learn about the Jimbo Fisher buyout and you realize that, yes, there is a lump sum of $10 million or $15 million or whatever, but then the rest of Jimbo Fisher's contract can be paid out over like a 10-year period, $4 million a year. And while you don't want to pay out, $4 million a year for the next 10 years, it isn't writing a check for $76 million. And so I bring it up because obviously if Calipari is not owed $33 million right up front, that completely changes the conversation about what is realistic and what isn't in terms of firing him. And so then the question becomes, okay, so John Calipari, let's just assume money isn't an issue. Could he actually be let go? And I'll be honest, I spent a lot of time on the phone with a lot of different people this weekend. I really, as of 10:30, don't know what Kentucky's going to do. Because on the one hand, listen, it's a lot of money. On the other hand, it's obvious that you can't keep going on the way that you have, okay? You lose to Oakland. This a couple years after you lose to St. Peter's. So we are talking about two of the three worst losses in NCAA tournament history for Kentucky in a three-year span in the John Calipari era. What I will be interested in, and I expect and I hear that the plan is for Mitch Barnhart to meet with John Calipari probably on Monday, I guess my question is as follows. What does John Calipari, we talked about this a little bit on Thursday, what does he actually sell to his AD about the future of this program? Because one thing that we've talked about, I think we were ahead of this on Thursday and Friday, every single thing that John Calipari can promise that this is going to change, he's already done it. Remember, after the 2021 season, they missed the NCAA tournament. What happens? He says, we're going to shake up the coaching staff. He does that. Then they go old with transfers. Then the transfers don't work. They go young with the freshmen this year, and it's all resulting in the same thing over and over. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. And I think that everyone, except maybe John Calipari, is at their wit's end. I will tell you, I heard from so many Kentucky fans this weekend, DMs, Instagram, Twitter, text messages for those who have my phone. And I will tell you, I think even the biggest Calipari supporters are done, are over it. Basically said, we're giving him this year. We got the freshman. He wants the freshman. He's going to bet on the freshman. And it didn't work out. And they just said, look, we're done. We want to see him go old. He went old. We want to see him go young. He went young. We want to see him change the offense. He changed the offense. And it's all resulting in the same thing, NCAA tournament losses. And so one, I think what's interesting, is there something John Calipari can sell to his administration about returning and why it makes sense? Beyond that, I think here's the interesting part. The rumors that came out of Kentucky this weekend are that the administration is going to make demands of him. And that's where it gets interesting. I've heard different stuff. It's hard to know what is true, okay? It is tight-lipped out of there. I don't think as of 10:30 Eastern, again, unless something is broken in the last 10 minutes, I don't think that Mitch Barnhart has made a decision at Kentucky, okay? I don't think that anything is finalized. But what I have heard is that he is going to make demands of that program. Maybe recruiting. Maybe going less with the freshman model. Maybe saying everybody in college basketball is getting older, we have to get older with them. Maybe there will be demands of the coaching staff being changed. Obviously, when the defense was as bad as it was this year, is there a defensive specialist that you can bring in? I don't know. But these are all things that are being asked, all things that are being questioned, and I guess that's what it comes down to for me, is when you look at this situation, what is going to be asked of John Calipari, and is he going to be willing to do it? Because John Calipari is an old guy, and he's a stubborn guy, and he has largely done things the way that he has wanted. And what I will say is I'll defend Cal a little bit on two things. One, I don't think an AD should be telling a coach, and I'm not saying this is 100% what has happened, but it sounds like this is where it's going. I don't think an AD should be telling a head coach, this is how you run your program. These are the players that you recruit. This is the type of team that I want to see. Mitch Barnhart is an administrator. He raises money. He sits in on meetings. He understands media rights. He doesn't understand how to put together a basketball team. The other thing I keep going back to, everybody's criticizing the freshman model. The freshman model worked this year. Kentucky was the number two seed in the toughest SEC that we have ever seen. And so they, by the way, beat Tennessee, who's in the Sweet 16, beat Alabama late in the year, who's in the Sweet 16, beat Auburn, who was the hottest team in the SEC to end the season. So I don't have a problem with the roster construction, but to me, it's clear that something is being lost in translation. And so that is the interesting part to me. Is there something the AD is going to demand? I don't think the AD should be doing that. And then is John Calipari going to listen? That's the other part that I think is equally as interesting. Because to me, I don't know if either one works in this current situation. And then at that point, it becomes, does John Calipari want to move on? Does he want to look for another job? I've seen a lot of people, Jeff Goodman said he's not going to retire. I just can't. First of all, I don't know how many even jobs are going to be open at this point. I guess Louisville's still open. We'll talk about that in a minute. But, you know, Michigan's not open. Ohio State's not open. West Virginia's not open. Where's he going to go, coach? Florida Atlantic? Like, it's not going to happen. And so I am curious if they can come to some sort of compromise where they meet in the middle. But those two guys do not get along, and I don't think that is going to happen. And so I don't know what to expect. I could really, as of, again, 10:35 on Sunday night, I could see it going either way. I don't know what is realistic and what isn't at this point. Because on the one hand, I can't see it coming back the way that it was. On the other, I can't see Mitch Barnhart saying, you run it the way you want. And I can't see Calipari letting him look him in the eye and say, okay, I'm going to do it your way. I can't see Calipari acquiescing to his AD. And so to me, I really don't know. The one thing I have been thinking about a lot over the course of, you know, the last day or so, what I do wonder, was this loss so shocking that maybe what the AD says is this, come back one more year, do it your way. And Kentucky fans don't want to hear that right now. But what I think has happened is this loss was so surprising. And I know it shouldn't be because you just lost to St. Peter's 2 years ago. But I don't think Mitch Barnhart woke up Thursday expecting to lose and expecting to have to raise a crap ton of money to buy out whatever John Calipari is owed and to pay a new head coach. And so because of that, I wonder if he says, you know what, come back one more year. Let's see if we can figure it out. Hopefully you get some of the guys from this year's team to come back as well. And then from there, maybe quietly behind the scenes, Mitch Barnhart starts raising that money, starts making those phone calls, starts asking those questions. Okay, who's actually interested? Is Scott Drew interested? What's it going to take? How much guaranteed money? Because the one thing you don't want to do is fire John Calipari with an idea of who you think you might be able to get and then start missing on people. You can't agree on Monday to mutually part ways with John Calipari, not knowing if Jay Wright would even take your phone call, if Scott Drew is going to say yes, if some of these other guys are going to say yes. Listen, we see what's going on at Louisville as we speak. Louisville pushed all their chips on one guy. He chose another job, and I think Louisville's scrambling a little bit. We'll get to them in a minute. And so to me, if I had to guess right now, I think Calipari's back. But I think behind the scenes, Mitch Barnhart is raising money. I think he's setting things up where if he has to pounce in March of 2025, he will be ready to go. Again, I keep using the Jimbo Fisher analogy, but to me, what it kind of reminds me of is the Jimbo Fisher situation where the 5-7 season 2 years ago shocked everybody. But I know for a fact at A&M, they were quietly, once that 5-7 season happened, they said, okay, we're going to make you hire an offensive coordinator, Bobby Petrino, and we're going to give you this year. But the second it started going sideways, remember they lost in week 2 at Texas A&M to Miami. The second it started going sideways, they slowly were working behind the scenes, get their money in order, figure things out. We're going to have to fire this guy and hire a new football coach. And they had months to prepare. My guess is as of right now, you know, I don't feel great about it, but that I was going to say Jimbo Fisher is back. If Jimbo Fisher's the next head coach at Kentucky basketball, that would be a story. My guess is that John Calipari is back next year. He's on very thin ice. And I think next year might be it. I'll tell you what, there's so much to react to. I don't want to spend too much more time on this topic. We can continue this conversation throughout the week because I think we're going to get more information as time goes on. But that's kind of the update on Kentucky. You know, I can't believe we're here. I really didn't think there was even the possibility that he was going to be let go. But now that he is, I guess I'm not surprised. Appreciate everybody's support. I see we are locked and loaded here on a Sunday. Really quickly, do want to talk about the other coaching situation at the in the state of Kentucky with the Louisville situation and Dusty May. And so the Dusty May story is fascinating. Okay, so I can tell you Dusty May was essentially the biggest domino on the coaching carousel. I'll tell you a funny story. Friday afternoon, I'm driving in to do radio. I call a buddy of mine, a high major assistant coach. You know, his season is done. And, you know, he's kind of trying to figure out, okay, am I going to go back to where I am? Am I looking for something new, whatever? And he basically said to me, remember, Florida Atlantic Northwestern was the first game on the schedule on Friday afternoon. And he's watching the game. It goes to overtime. I'm on the phone with him. He goes, these MFers got to lose. He's talking about Florida Atlantic. He's like, these MFers got to lose because this coaching carousel has to get going. And what was interesting about Dusty May, the entire cycle was really built around him. Now, I think he's a little bit overrated, which we're going to talk about in a minute. But I am here to tell you, everybody was waiting to see what he did. Louisville, it was clear that when Scott Drew was not interested in that job, he became their number one candidate. Beyond that, I was told, and I've seen Jeff Goodman tweet it out, Borzello tweeted out, I was told Vanderbilt thought they had a legitimate shot with him. Michigan, goes without saying, thought they had a shot. I think there's some weird tie to West Virginia. West Virginia thought they had a shot with him. So everybody was waiting on Dusty May. Our guy Trilly Donovan, I guess in his Discord, puts out that Louisville and Dusty May have agreed to terms. And then a couple hours later, out of nowhere, the Woj bomb. Where did Woj out of left field just shoving all the college basketball insiders out of the way? Saying, you know, basically Woj saying Dusty May has agreed to terms with the University of Michigan. I can tell you, it absolutely stunned the folks at Louisville. But I'm also here to tell you, I don't think it's necessarily the worst thing. So in terms of what happened, this is what I can piece together with Dusty May and Louisville. As I said, with Louisville, Louisville went hard after Scott Drew. I don't know if Scott Drew ever considered Louisville seriously. But what I can tell you is there's zero doubt in my mind that Louisville or that Scott Drew in Louisville, I think it was more than a phone call. I don't think it was just, hey, thanks, but no thanks. I think there was probably more there. But Louisville, once Scott Drew said no, it was so obvious that Dusty May was their guy. What I don't think Louisville ever took the time to consider was Louisville Dusty May's top choice? Because Dusty May, listen, I don't know the guy, but I was around him at the Final Four. He's quiet. He's cerebral. And I'll be honest, like when all these jobs opened, one, I heard Ohio State definitely wanted him. But when the Michigan job opened, I said, that's not the worst spot for him. He's quiet. He's not boisterous. And let me say this as far as him not getting the Louisville job. Again, Louisville wanted him. I think that there was probably one or two boosters kind of running their mouths, telling everybody that he was coming. I don't think anybody took the time to consider that maybe Louisville wasn't his top choice. But at the same time, let me say this, Louisville fans. I truly believe, in my heart of hearts, this is all going to work out for the best for you. Because at the end of the day, I never loved the fit with Dusty May in Louisville. Louisville, listen, I've spent a lot of time in Louisville, Kentucky, whatever. And I understand it's a state divided, you know, no pun intended, red and blue, okay? But at the same time, Louisville is a great job for the right person. But it is one of those rare jobs. It is a 365-day-a-year job. You don't get to disappear. You don't get to escape. Everything you do is analyzed and overanalyzed, much like Kentucky, much like UConn, much like Arizona. There's only a handful of these jobs in college basketball, but Louisville is one of them. People would see that as a negative, and I actually think Dusty May probably saw that as a negative. In some ways, I think you have to give credit to Dusty May. He knew that he was not built for that fishbowl of Louisville. But guess what? If he knows it, Louisville fans, guess what? It's for the best that he didn't take this job. Let me put it this way. I thought the best way I saw it put, my buddy Nick Coffey hosts radio 3 to 6 Eastern time in Louisville. He tweeted this out, and I thought it perfectly encapsulated the Dusty May situation. He said as follows. He said, if somebody has a Louisville offer and a Vandy offer, and they're actually considering Vandy, then they're just not cut out for the Louisville job. Sorry, end of story. That's just the bottom line. And so I think when I look at the Dusty May situation, that's how I see it as well. He wasn't cut out for it. It wasn't going to work. He's not built for that fishbowl. And so now I think what's interesting is what happens next. As soon as Dusty May turned it down, I'll be honest, I heard the name Shaheen Holloway. I know Jeff Goodman also put it out there after the fact. Shaheen Holloway, of course, is the head coach at Seton Hall right now. People would ask, why would he leave his alma mater? Well, guess what? Seton Hall, among the Power Conference teams, I can tell you, I think they probably have about the worst NIL setup of pretty much any major Power Conference team. I mean, probably DePaul was worse this year, whatever. But their NIL is really, really, really bad. I don't think that they think they can compete. I've heard stories about some of their good players potentially entering the portal with eligibility because they just want a payday after this season. And so I think Shaheen Holloway is a legitimate candidate because he doesn't have the resources at his own alma mater to win. Now, the question, if you're Louisville, is he a guy that actually wants your job? Because I think he'd be good. But does he want your job, or is he leveraging you to get more money for his program at the spot that he's at? Is he leveraging you to get more NIL money for Seton Hall? That's the million-dollar question, and that's something only Josh Hurd can answer. Pat Kelsey from Charleston is also appears to be a candidate. Amir Abdul-Rahim, who of course was at South Florida this year, we advocated for them this year, is a candidate as well. Let me wrap by saying this. Shaheen Holloway, to me, would be a good hire. I was an advocate, as I just said, of Amir Abdul-Rahim. And Pat Kelsey, I think, listen, young, energetic, et cetera, et cetera. And he's won a lot, won at Charleston, won before that at Winthrop. Let me also say this, though. I am very confused. And again, I saw my buddy Nick Coffey tweet this. Nick was on my radio show, full disclosure, on Saturday, but I have not talked to him otherwise. Nick tweeted this out, and I think he's right on this. One, I never understood why Dusty May was such an obvious, he has to be the guy candidate. Never made sense to me. Didn't get it. Still don't get it to a degree. Beyond that, I don't understand. There appear to be three coaches with real power conference experience that are interested in that job. I think at least at some point, Eric Musselman from Arkansas was. You could criticize him, disappointing year this year, whatever. Bottom line is, this guy has gone to three straight Sweet 16s before this season, two Elite Eights, and he went to one at Nevada. Think about all the coaches that can't say that. Bill Self can't say that. Tom Izzo can't say that. John Cal. You get to the tournament and win, that's the end game. Like you know, it's like the Herm Edwards quote. You play to win the game. Musk gets to the tournament and he wins there. That's all anyone in this sport cares about. I think he's perfectly built for that city. I don't understand why that call is not being made. Jerome Tang, Kansas State. I don't understand why that call is not being made. By the way, Will Wade, I understand to a degree that one because I understand that basically, that Josh Hurd, the AD at Louisville, kind of doesn't really want anyone with a ton of baggage. But guess what? It's 2024. It's the NIL era. It's okay to have baggage. As Will Wade said on this show, the bottom line is just get a power conference job, raise NIL money. You can win anywhere. Will Wade won an SEC championship at LSU. You don't think he can win at Louisville? And so I don't understand this rush that we have to hire somebody young and sort of inexperienced when you have three coaches out there that I believe are interested in this job, that would take this job, that have proven they can win at the high major level. So that's the latest at Louisville. I don't think it's the worst thing that Dusty May did not take this job. I'll be honest, I don't think it's the worst thing if Shaheen Holloway gets this job. But I don't understand why the call to Jerome Tang isn't being made, why the call to Will Wade at least is not, the conversation is not happening. I don't get it. And obviously, I think Musselman speaks for himself. We'll see what happens. Last time I checked, I think Seton Hall is still in the NIT. So that'll be an interesting one to see how long that Louisville will be willing to wait. Let me make sure that that is accurate. Yeah, Seton Hall is in the NIT. They don't play again until Wednesday. So you're talking about potentially, 4 or 5 days to hire a coach. That could be a debacle. Tell you what, I do want to come back. Do want to talk about the rest of the weekend. We got to talk about the weekend. We got to talk about some college hoops. I didn't plan on going that long on Coach Cal and also Louisville. But if there's ever a time to talk about this weekend, now is the time. Producer Matt, do we have our quick word from our BetUS partners? And we'll come back and we will talk about the games at hand. Quick break. Be right back.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
America's favorite sportsbook and casino. Live betting and racebook. We're celebrating 30 years with a historic offer. A 125% sign-up bonus on your first three deposits. Plus, 10% gambler's insurance. Get started today. BetUS, where the game begins.
All right, I am back. Good to be back. Like I said, I do want to get to some of the big storylines from the weekend. And where I want to start is this, and I'd be curious, like I said, I would love to have everybody in the comments section go ahead, give me a grade for what you would say is the grade for the opening weekend of the NCAA tournament. Because to me, I think the way that you look at this NCAA tournament, there's one of two ways. You either sit there and say it was a really boring NCAA tournament because there were no major upsets. Should keep you updated on the two games that are still going on right now, by the way. Houston does have a 9-point lead, 6 minutes to go. And then also San Diego State and Yale are playing as well. But I bring it up because, to me, by the way, San Diego State is blowing out Yale. So bring it up because, to me, the way that you see this NCAA tournament, you can see it as one of two ways. There weren't a lot of upsets, so it was kind of boring. Or you can see it the way that I see it. There weren't a lot of upsets, but you know what that means? We get some great Sweet 16 games. And it's funny because, again, I did a lot of radio this weekend. We talked about it. And to me, there's an adage in college basketball and with the NCAA tournament, and that's this, is that fans always love upsets, and we all love upsets, right? You know, those are the moments that you remember, all the great ones. I can't think of any off the top of my head, whatever. Princeton beating Arizona last year, Furman beating Virginia, whatever. But I bring it up, Purdue losing, by the way, not sure if you heard, they lost to a 16 seed last year, neither here nor there. Bring it up because the problem with all those upsets is that when you get a lot of upsets early, you know what ends up happening? Now you got to watch Fairleigh Dickinson in the second round. Now Princeton's in the Sweet 16. Now Florida Atlantic is in the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight in the Final Four, and you know nothing about those teams. And so I bring it up because, to me, I'll be honest, and if this makes me an elitist, I don't really care. I think this weekend was awesome because all of the top teams won. The exceptions, obviously, look, Kentucky fans, I'm sorry you lost to Oakland. Baylor, you lost to Clemson. Auburn, you lost to Yale. That's basically it. And so because of it, think about what we get now. Think about who has advanced. Houston is up by 9 with 5 minutes to go. If Houston wins, that means we get all four number one seeds in the second weekend of the NCAA tournament. Houston, Purdue, UConn, and of course, who is the fourth number one? UConn, Houston, Purdue, and North Carolina, who I'll see in Los Angeles. All four number two seeds advanced. Arizona, Iowa State, Marquette, and whatever. Tennessee is the fourth number two seed. You have two of the three number three seeds. Creighton advanced, and there was another one, and then a bunch of number four seeds as well. And so to me, when you look at this tournament, think about the matchups that we're going to get in the Sweet 16. North Carolina, Alabama. That's pretty freaking good. We are probably trending towards a UConn-San Diego State rematch in Boston next week. Remember, they played for the national championship last year. Oh, by the way, that's the early game because we get Iowa State-Illinois at night. Iowa State-Illinois could be one of the games of the year. Incredible contrast in styles. We're going to get, as I said, Bama-UNC. By the way, if Houston holds on, we get Duke-Houston. I mean, these are awesome games. Think about the brands. UConn's going to be in the second weekend. Carolina's going to be in the second weekend. Arizona's going to be in the second weekend. Duke's going to be in the second weekend. Tennessee's going to be in the second weekend. Marquette's not a huge brand, but we know Shaka Smart. We know Tyler Kolek. I think this is a great thing for college basketball, and I cannot wait to start breaking down those second round games in general, or second weekend games in general. Probably do a show Wednesday to do all that. In terms of the big storylines, listen, there's obviously a couple conferences that are big winners in all of this. To me, you know who I think the biggest winner is this weekend? Listen, there's no doubt in my mind. The biggest winner is the ACC. And I'll be blunt. I was one of those guys. I was critical of the ACC all year. I said, I don't think they're very good. I don't think Duke's very good. I don't know how good everybody else is. Well, guess what? Virginia probably should not have gotten in, but Virginia should have gotten in. They lose in the opening four tournament, the play-in tournament. But everybody else has been awesome. North Carolina, I'll tell you this. I didn't really understand North Carolina only being a four-point favorite against Michigan State. They're playing well. I never really thought Michigan State was good at any point, but they take care of business. I got to give credit where it's due. Duke. Listen, I have been a critic of Duke for the last couple weeks. I sat there and said, where are the great wins for Duke? I said, outside of a win against Baylor in December, there are no great wins. Swept by UNC. Lost in the opener of the ACC tournament. How good is this team? Well, I know they only played Vermont and James Madison to get to the Sweet 16, but guess what? James Madison destroyed Wisconsin on Friday night. I know the score wouldn't reflect it. James Madison was the significantly better team. So for Duke to come out and win by 38 points, excuse me, they won by darn near 40 on Sunday. To me, that was, listen, I've been critical of Duke. You got to give him credit. A 38-point win is unbelievable, and obviously the difference was the three-point shot. 14 of 28 from three. Jared McCain was absolutely unbelievable in this tournament and in this game. 8 for 11 from three for Jared McCain, the true freshman. Tyrese Proctor, 4 of 10. McCain goes for 30, and Duke gets the win. So now all of a sudden, again, Friday night, we got Duke-Houston in a Sweet 16 game. That's going to be awesome if Houston can hold on here. Credit to NC State. Listen, NC State, we know the story. They would have only gotten in if they won the ACC tournament, but they get to the tournament. They're playing their best basketball. Remember, took care of Texas Tech. They beat Oakland in overtime. How about Kevin Keats? You know, it's funny. Not a lot of people were talking about this, and maybe they shouldn't be, but remember, UConn in 2011, what did they do? 5 wins in 5 days at the Big East tournament. They go on to win the national championship. I don't think NC State is doing the same, but they're in the Sweet 16. They're playing as well as anybody. 7 games in the last about 12 days. They just keep winning. They advance. And so I got to give credit where it's due. I was critical of the ACC. I did not believe in them, but they deserve their flowers. Carolina wins, advances. I thought Clemson actually matched up well with Baylor on Sunday. But I'll also be honest, I didn't think Clemson was very good, and I thought they were going to lose to New Mexico. I can argue, and I would argue, one of the most impressive wins of the weekend was on Friday afternoon when Clemson took the wood to New Mexico, and it wasn't even competitive. They win by 19 points, 77-56. In that game, they hold New Mexico, which I thought had the three best guards in that game, to 3 of 23 shooting. It was never even competitive. So now Clemson goes to LA, where they will play Arizona. Credit to them, but credit to the ACC overall. Really quickly, got to credit the Big East as well. This is one, it's funny, right? Because the ACC, I think we all kind of thought was maybe a little bit overrated, maybe not that good. You know, did they deserve all those teams? They really didn't, but they got them anyway. But the Big East is the exact opposite. Big East is the exact opposite. Big East is a conference where we all knew they got screwed on Selection Sunday, and it has come to fruition in this NCAA tournament. As you see on the ticker, great stuff by producer Matt there. Big East now 6-0 in this NCAA tournament. How about this? 5 of the 6 wins are by double figures. UConn destroys Stetson, destroys Northwestern, they advance. Marquette destroys whoever they played in the opening round. I can't even remember, all the days are running together. Beat Colorado, they advance. Creighton, obviously it took overtime, but they beat Oregon on their way to the Sweet 16. So credit to the Big East. And listen, we need to keep calling out the committee, because the committee is an embarrassment and the committee is an abomination. This was clearly one of the 2 or 3 best conferences in college basketball this year. And I'll take it a step further. We talked about it on Selection Sunday. If UConn is the number one overall seed, if Marquette is a 2, if Creighton is a 3, guess what? Guess what? It means that by definition, it means that those teams had to have been pretty good during the regular season, and that a lot of their resume was built off of beating Seton Hall, beating St. John's. And then you look at those teams. Seton Hall beat Marquette. They beat UConn. There's only 3 teams in college basketball that have beaten UConn so far this year. Seton Hall is one of them. They should have been in. As I just said, they are in the NIT quarterfinals or whatever, but it is an abomination. It is proven at this point that they deserve to be in. So credit to the Big East. Listen, I can tell you, you know, talking to some of those coaching staffs, it was personal. It was personal to go out there and prove that they belonged, they deserve to be in this tournament. And I think that those 3 schools wanted to send a message. Credit to Creighton, credit to Marquette, credit to the Big East. They are all in. A couple other thoughts from the weekend. I'm just going to jump around. I apologize because I'm just going to go in a million different directions. So I got to give credit to a team that I have, you know, I guess the best way to describe it, a love-hate relationship with. And it's really just a love-love relationship with, but they let me down. That's the Arizona Wildcats, okay? So they were the first game on Saturday, the first round of 32 game. And if you listen to this bracket, and I got some pushback from Arizona fans because I didn't pick them to make it out of the first weekend, I said, look, I still think Arizona might be the most talented team in all of college basketball. I think they're as good as UConn. I think they're as good as Houston. But they haven't put together 2 great games in a row all season long. I go back to last week in the Pac-12 tournament. Producer Matt and I were there sitting courtside. Caleb Love's dunking from the foul line. They beat USC by 21 points. The next day they lose to Oregon. Now maybe Oregon's a little bit better, but I bring it up because I just haven't seen that consistency from Arizona. But one thing that I will say, what did I say about Arizona in our bracket preview? I said, if Arizona gets to Los Angeles, if they get to the Sweet 16 and Elite 8, where they are going to have a huge fan advantage, I believe they're going to their first Final Four since 2001, okay? So Arizona is now in Los Angeles. They play Clemson. I'll be blunt. They are the better team than Clemson. That is a game they should win. Now, I'll be nervous picking them because every time I pick them, they let me down. But that will actually be the opening game of the Sweet 16. They'll play at 7:09 Eastern, 4:09 Pacific on Thursday. But Arizona looked really good in that win over Dayton. Got out to a huge lead. Then they let Dayton back in. But at the end of the day, you know, what we saw from them is who they are. 4 different guys in that game scored double figures. Keyshawn Johnson was awesome, 13 points. You know, Caleb Love has 19. Pella Larson has 13. Jaden Bradley off the bench. I've been consistent with this all year. I think Arizona's bench, I think Arizona's top eight is right up there with UConn's top eight. Crevis, KJ Lewis, Jaden Bradley off the bench are all ballers. The game we were at with USC last week, KJ Lewis was the best player on the floor for Arizona. On Saturday, you could argue that Jaden Bradley was the one that made the plays for Arizona to allow them to win. And so we'll preview probably Thursday and Friday's games on Tuesday night. But you talk about a team that's trending in the right direction, credit to Arizona. Arizona plays Clemson, North Carolina, and Alabama. Listen, I'd be remiss if I didn't talk a little bit about the Alabama Crimson Tide. They take care of business against the Grand Canyon Antelopes. By the way, crazy story, but when I was a Big J back at foxsports.com, a lot of people don't know, I started my career as a writer. I did like the first major feature on Grand Canyon about 2016, I believe. Dan Marley was the head coach at the time. They were transitioning to D1. They had one really good year. Was really cool to see them make the NCAA tournament to get their first tournament win on Friday night against St. Mary's. Well, guess what? They played a thriller against Bama on Sunday night. Wasn't perfect. A lot of mistakes, a lot of turnovers, 14 turnovers for the Lopes, 13 for Alabama, a lot of missed threes, a lot of loose balls, a lot of whatever. But listen, let me take a moment and credit Nate Oates, okay? Nate Oates, to me, I think has done as good of a coaching job as anyone in college basketball this year. You understand, like, it's easy to forget. Alabama lost 5 of its top 6 scorers last season off of that team that was a number one seed. Brandon Miller's gone. Noah Clowney's gone. Jaden Bradley is obviously at Arizona. Couple other guys. He loses all 3 assistant coaches off of last year's team to head coaching opportunities. And so Nate Oates had to put this roster together in the summer without a coaching staff. This year, his team, best player Mark Sears, began his career at Ohio. Not Ohio State. Ohio. Aaron Estrada was at Hofstra last year. Grant Nelson was at North Dakota State last year. This is not a team with Brandon Miller and a bunch of 5 stars. This isn't 3 or 4 years ago with Herb Jones, a future NBA player. Their best recruit, by the way, Jaron Stevenson, reclassified and didn't commit until June. And so for Nate Oates to have this team in the Sweet 16, this is his best coaching job, period. Credit to Nate Oates. They advance. They will face North Carolina. You talk about what should be a very fun game. North Carolina is so much better defensively, so I do think that will probably help them. But at the same time, I do sit there and say, you know, I think it's going to be a tough matchup for Bama. But again, we can discuss that game later on in the week. But you just talk about an absolutely fascinating matchup, and credit to Nate Oates. I think he is doing as good of a job as anybody in college hoops. I do want to go quickly to the Midwest region, where I'll tell you this. I know we talked a little bit about Creighton a minute ago. I think the Midwest region is as interesting as any region in the tournament for the following reason. 1, Purdue has not made a Final Four since 1980. Everybody knows that. Tennessee has never made a Final Four. Creighton has never made a Final Four. And Gonzaga, of course, has never won a national championship. Gotten to a Final Four twice, but can't quite get over the hump. And so to me, this is a fascinating region because whoever wins this region, and I think it's going to be Purdue, it's a feel-good story. If Tennessee goes first ever Final Four, Creighton, first ever Final Four, Gonzaga trying to get that national championship monkey off their back, although I don't know that they'll win it. And of course, Purdue. Want to go ahead and start with Purdue. Purdue, to its credit, because I know Purdue fans think I hate them, Purdue destroyed Utah State. 106-67 was the final score. And listen, this was a game. I have been the person that has criticized Purdue about free throw discrepancy. And it's not really that I criticize Purdue. It's that I don't think the refs understand how to referee Zach Edey. I bring it up because it was none of that on Sunday, okay? Because the thing is now, I'm the anti-Purdue guy, and I know there's Purdue fans probably in the mentions yelling and screaming, saying I'm the dumbest person that they've ever met. But I also watched the games. And I think there have been times where the refs did not know how to handle Zach Edey. Sunday was about dominance, and it was about dominance by Purdue and really dominance by Zach Edey. This game was close early. At one point, I think it was 24-23. And then a couple things happened. Utah State just stopped running offense. They got a foul on Zach Edey, and then they kept trying to attack him, and he just kind of stood there with his hands up, and he blocked a bunch of shots, and all of a sudden you look up, and Purdue's on like a 16-2 run or something, and the game was over. So credit to Purdue. They were the better team. They stepped up. And I'll say this. I want to take a moment. We don't have the audio, but I'm going to try to find the quote from Matt Painter, because, oh boy, did Purdue fans ever tag me on this quote? I want to see if I can find what Matt Painter said after the game. So he was asked about, so this is what he was asked about. He was asked about people who cover college basketball that say that, he was asked about people who think that Zach Edey is only good because he's tall. And this is what Matt Painter said. He said, yeah, they shouldn't cover basketball. Then he continued, I just think everybody should like take tests on knowledge of what they're doing. I think all coaches should take tests so they understand refereeing. And I think all referees should take a test so they understand coaching. And I think all journalists just have to take a basketball quiz or test. Anybody that tweets, they should have to be able to do it. And they say something so moronic as that, then they should have to have a probationary status where they can't tweet for 3 months. I think it'll help society. Just try to knock out the fool so they don't have to meet at the local Walmart and say things that don't make any sense. Matt Painter coming in hot. And as you can guess, a lot of Purdue fans went ahead and shared that message with me. Can I just say this? A couple things. So one, I actually agree with like 99% of what Matt Painter said there. First off, I would like to find the journalist or anybody that covers college basketball that thinks that Zach Edey is only good because he's tall. Maybe that person exists. I have not seen that take yet. Okay. I've not seen that take yet. And if you think Zach Edey is only good because he's tall, you're a freaking idiot. Guy goes for 30-20 every night. I think he's awesome. I don't think the refs have totally figured out how to referee him, but I think he's awesome. What I will also say, I also think Matt Painter is right about social media. I think it allows a lot of I've said for years, everybody being able to express every opinion they have at every possible time is not the best thing for society. Like it's not good. And I do think there has been a lot of Purdue discourse over the course of the last couple months that I think is idiotic. We mentioned what Dan Le Batard said the other day. Remember Dan Le Batard, Dan Le Batard probably has never watched a single minute of college basketball until last weekend when Purdue was in the Big Ten tournament. Dan Le Batard called Zach Edey a plague, okay? And so listen, Purdue fans, you can hate me if you want, but at least I watch the games. I've watched all your big games. I watched the Tennessee game. I watched the Alabama game. I watched the Xavier game back at the beginning of the season. I think Zach Edey's incredibly gifted. Now, the only thing that I would say that I disagree with on Matt Painter, one, I do think that, first of all, I don't know of the journalists who only think that Zach Edey is good because he is tall. But two, I also do think, listen, Sunday you won because you were clearly the better team. I like the matchup for you against Gonzaga next Friday, a team that you have already beaten this season. But what I will also say, when you have a plus 36 free throw discrepancy against Northwestern, when what was it? Plus 25 against Wisconsin the other day. I will meet you in the middle. You can agree that anyone who thinks Zach Edey is only good because he's tall is an idiot. But I'm sorry, coach, if you think that plus 25 free throw advantages are normal, then I don't know what to tell you because they're just not. And so if Matt Painter was on the other end of another team shooting 25 more foul shots than him or 36 more foul shots than him like Northwestern, or 14 more foul shots like Alabama, or 18 more foul shots than Tennessee, I guarantee you he wouldn't be singing the praises of the big guy. And that's all I've ever said from the beginning. You can't have one guy that is so good on one end of the court that he fouls out 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 guys at once, and then on the other end commits 1 or 2 fouls. I'm sorry, it doesn't happen. It doesn't exist. And so that's my only point. A lot of people tagged me. I actually didn't have very much problem with what Matt Painter had to say. We'll see what happens with Purdue. They play Gonzaga this coming weekend. Let me give Gonzaga a little bit of credit here, man. Listen, this is another one. I have been pretty critical of Mark Few since Tommy Lloyd left. Tommy Lloyd is, of course, the head coach at Arizona. He is previously, Tommy Lloyd was previously the head coach or the lead assistant at Gonzaga. And what I have said is that I think there has been a talent drop-off at Gonzaga since Tommy Lloyd left. Now, the first year, they had Chet Holmgren, and honestly, that roster was built before Tommy Lloyd took the Arizona job. Chet Holmgren committed like a week after, but everybody knew he was going to Gonzaga. But the last 2 years, there has been a talent difference at Gonzaga. And I said, I think a lot of it's Tommy Lloyd. I think the fall off is obvious. And so I bring it up because this, to me, has been Mark Few's best coaching job as the head coach at Gonzaga. Because when I look at this roster, certainly probably 6, 8 weeks ago, I was wondering if this was an NCAA tournament team, certainly not a second weekend team. For them to be there, 9th straight year, it is incredible. And I'll tell you this, I was watching the post game. I think Mark Few, you could see that he was a little emotional, like he's extra proud of this group for what they have done this year. So from Gonzaga's perspective, I got to give them a ton of credit. I am so fascinated to watch that game. Although, as I said before the tournament started, I think that is a really, really, really tough matchup for Gonzaga. You know, we saw them play in Maui earlier this year. And when I look at that game, it was the first one where it was like, oh crap, you know, those guys are just, they don't have an answer for Zach Edey. So it'll be an interesting game, but I got to give Gonzaga credit. I did not think they were going to be here, but they destroyed Kansas. Obviously Kansas after that game, you know, I'm just kind of ripping through stuff here, but Bill Self, of course, had the comments about, you know, I'm already focused on next year and I've been thinking about next year for the last month. If you only read the one sentence, it looks bad. If you actually hear the whole quote, it's not bad. He basically just said, like, look, bottom line is we have, I think, 6 healthy scholarship players. We've only had 8 healthy scholarship players for most of the year. And he basically said, like, we were not built to have a lot of big time success this year. So Bill Self, I had no problem. Kansas is out. We'll see what happens there. But yeah, that Midwest region is going to be great. Credit to Purdue. They got the job done. 2 dominant wins. Credit to Gonzaga. By the way, how about those Tennessee Vols? Okay. Wasn't the prettiest effort, but you know, listen, if everyone's going to criticize Rick Barnes for losing these close games, maybe we give him credit for winning 62-58 against the Texas Longhorns. You know, it was an interesting game. Everybody knows about the 3-point shooting. Tennessee finishes 3 of 25 from 3. But listen, Dalton Knecht, even in a game where he did not play well, finishes with 18 points. That's obviously the difference in this game. If this was the Tennessee of pre-Dalton Knecht and they don't have these 18 points, they lose 58-54. You know, they would have made up some of those points, but not all of them. But Dalton Knecht on a bad night getting 18, I think to me shows that this team is improved. They are different than in previous years. So credit to Tennessee for getting the win. They obviously will now face Creighton. I think that's a fun game. I do wonder, I don't think the monkey is off Tennessee's back, but I do think they had to win this opening round. They had to get out of this opening weekend of the tournament. They do. You know, Creighton, I actually don't think is a terrible matchup for Tennessee. Great offensive team, but they're not super deep. They just played an overtime game. Now, those two teams won't play till Friday. They're the final tip-off Friday night. But I just bring it up because when I look at this situation, I think that's a game Tennessee can win. And I've said from the beginning, listen, 3 things I said at the beginning of this tournament. I said that I believe that if Arizona could get to LA, they would make it to the Final Four. We'll see if that comes to fruition. I said both Tennessee and Purdue, I thought, had very manageable paths. I think Purdue, there isn't a team until Tennessee that can beat them. And I think if they get Creighton, that's a great matchup for them as well. So we'll see what happens there. But credit to Purdue, credit to Creighton, all that good stuff. Really quickly, in the East, UConn's such a juggernaut, man. And listen, they won on Sunday night. By the way, best bet, easy win. They beat Northwestern 75-58. Northwestern had 18 points at halftime. UConn kind of let the foot off the gas. Big story for UConn, Donovan Klingon, 14 points, 14 boards, 8 blocks. If you get a pissed off Donovan Klingon with all the other pieces, Tristan Newton had 20 points, Cam Spencer had 11, you get a pissed off Donovan Klingon, UConn cannot be beat. So UConn wins. Listen, UConn fans, I know you're mad because UConn fans get mad because like UConn gets glossed over in these recap shows, but there's nothing new or interesting to say about them. They're dominant. They're incredible. There was never a moment after the first 5 minutes that you thought Northwestern could actually win this game. So UConn advances. They will face the winner of San Diego State and Yale. That game is currently at halftime. San Diego State up 24. I think we'll get a rematch of last year's national championship game. I think that second game will be fascinating. Illinois is playing as good as anybody in college basketball right now. Okay, Illinois, they won their two games in the opening two rounds, 85-69, and then they beat Duquesne 89-63, sending Keith Dambrot into retirement. Terrence Shannon Jr. is playing like the best player in college basketball right now. 30 points against Duquesne, 26 against Morehead State. This after scoring 34 and 40 in his final two games at the Big Ten tournament. Illinois and Iowa State is going to be fascinating because Illinois is just putting the ball in the basket at an insane rate. Iowa State, we know, is one of the best defensive teams in college basketball. To their credit, they get the 11-point win over Washington State. And so that is the matchup there. By the way, this Texas A&M Houston game is getting very interesting. I may try to sneak it on the side screen here as we go final. Houston is up 4 with 55 seconds left, although now they're up by 3, I think. Whatever, I'm going to get this game up as we watch. I'll tell you what, producer Matt, I know we've covered a lot of ground starting with Calipari and everything. Let's do our best to get a few questions before we get out of here. Go ahead, throw a few of them up on the screen. If you want your questions answered, make sure to do that. And we will obviously be monitoring this Houston game momentarily. Give me half a second, producer Matt. Do we have any good questions so far? Looking to see what comes up. Laren says, wouldn't rule out Jay Wright. There is some form of interest from what I have heard. I don't think we get him, but I think he would listen. So this is in reference to the Kentucky job if John Calipari and Mitch Barnhart cannot meet in the middle somewhere. I've said it since December or since February or January, excuse me. January was when I did my first Kentucky coaching carousel, news and notes piece on YouTube. I said Jay Wright would be my first phone call. And not only would Jay Wright be my first phone call, this has to be the football contract. This has to be the contract that's so much money that maybe he says no, but crap, he's got to think about it. Now, with Jay Wright, it'll be interesting because I'll say this about Jay Wright. I don't think he loves the NIL era. I did think his comments after Kentucky lost the other night were very interesting because he's close with Cal. I don't think he was actively trying to criticize Cal, but it kind of started to sound like, I think I could do this job better. Basically, for people who missed it, Jay Wright, after Kentucky lost, basically insinuated, look, you can't win with freshmen. It's hard to build a culture, blah, 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 this and that. I don't think he was actively like trying to go after John Calipari, but I think it was pretty clear that he felt like he could maybe do the job a little bit better. Laren says, Jay Wright, maybe there's interest. I don't know that he's coming out of retirement, but listen, if he's going to come out of retirement for anything, you would think this would be the job. Let's keep it going. By the way, Houston, Texas A&M, this is so good. Lord forbid we didn't have Anthony Davis or we would have zero. Well, Taylor Robinson talking about Kentucky said, if we didn't have Anthony Davis, we'd have zero. I think the opposite could be true as well. Listen, I don't think now is the time to just bash everything that John Calipari has done, because he was amazing for the first 8 or 9 years of that era. And so you could say we'd have zero without Anthony Davis. Okay, fine. But you get one stop against Wisconsin, you're 40-0, you're playing, you're 39-0, you're playing Duke to go to a national championship. You know, 14. Listen, I'm a UConn guy. That 14 game, Kentucky was probably the better team. Just one team had Shabazz Napier, one team didn't. You know, 2017 with De'Aaron Fox, Luke May misses that jumper. You're going to the Final Four. You're going to be the favorite once you get there. North Carolina ends up winning that national championship. 2019, by the way, you lose to Auburn. You go to that Final Four. Auburn should have beaten Virginia. Ask producer Matt. And so, I get the frustration with John Calipari at this moment. And yes, he only has one. And that if this is it for him, that will forever be his legacy. And that kind of sucks, especially with all these guys in the NBA having a great deal of success. But the inverse of that as well is that, like, you can sit there and say, well, you know, I mean, we only have one. It's like, yeah, but there were seven or eight that you could have had. And again, I do think whoever is next, I think to expect them to have the program operating at that level for a 7-8 year stretch is tough to ask. Keeping you updated on this Texas A&M Houston game. I'm sure you're all double dipping. Houston is up by 3 with 10 seconds to go. Christopher Wright says a lot of good players are coming, so this should be interesting. If he is fired, I don't think they keep that class. Listen, this is something that I think is a fascinating element of having John Calipari as your head coach. As long as he is your head coach, you are always going to have a good recruiting class coming in. And so you are always going to have to deal with the possibility of losing a couple of those recruits. Now, this class is interesting because there's some really talented guys. Jaden Quaintance is a potential 2-year guy coming in because he's not eligible for the NBA draft after 1 year. Carter Knox, I do like a lot. Travis Perry obviously just won a Kentucky State Championship. So I just bring it up because you're always going to have really good players. Coming in. And so having a good recruiting class is not a reason to keep your head coach. By the way, I do have this Texas A&M Houston game on. Wade Taylor took a 3 that he probably, I can't do. Oh no. Oh my goodness. We have a jump ball possession of Texas A&M with 1 second left. I'll tell you what, looked like there could have been a foul there. I didn't love Wade Taylor taking a 3 with 6 seconds left on the clock, 7 seconds left on the clock, whatever. He got another 3 up, all that good stuff. Crazy game, crazy finish. Houston was so dominant throughout the regular season. They do not look great now. We'll see what happens. There's 1.2 seconds left in this game. But back to Calipari. Whatever time he goes, there's always going to be a good class lined up. Jerry Deaton says, what about Tyler Ulis as the coach, Aaron? I don't know if Tyler Ulis, Kentucky legend, former SEC player of the year, I don't know if he's ready to be the head coach just yet. That would be an interesting thing. Would he stay on staff? I would think that he would. By the way, this is another thing about having an ugly breakup with Calipari. Is you have an ugly breakup with Calipari, you could lose the support of a lot of those NBA guys. And I know that's not a reason to keep John Calipari if he's not winning. But having Devin Booker in your corner, having Karl Anthony Towns in your corner, having John Wall now that he's retired in your corner, Boogie Cousins is in the media, having him in your corner, Tyrese Maxey, Tyler Hero. By the way, 10 years from now, Reed Sheppard, Rob Dillingham. It's important to have those guys in your corner. Now, again, that's not a reason to keep John Calipari if he's not doing the job. But it's also not a reason to end this thing in an ugly manner if that's the case as well. And so it'll be fascinating. It's a chicken and the egg thing of I don't think that they're going to let Calipari come back without making some sort of changes. But I also do wonder if Calipari will come back if he's being told how he has to run his program. Keep it going, keep it going, keep it going. Oh my goodness. And we have a tie game, Texas A&M in overtime. Anderson Garcia, a 3 at the buzzer. Terrible for a defensive-oriented team in Houston. That is a terrible, terrible defensive stand there. So we're going to overtime. Houston, Texas A&M, 86-86. Let's go. Really quick, Taylor Robinson says, Louisville is a lot like UCLA right now, going to make another bad hire. Not a lot of credibility for the program or AD anymore. I'll tell you, you know, the AD at Louisville, I do think, I don't think he's handled this well. And it does feel like if you go to a Shaheen Holloway, but not really a Shaheen Holloway, a Amir Abdur-Rahim, guys like that, I do tend to think that feels a little bit like you don't have a plan. Like you thought you were getting Dusty May and now you don't know what you're doing. And so to me, I kind of agree. He feels like he is panicking. I don't know if he is, but with any of these searches, you have to have a backup plan if your number one guy says no, right? What do they say about ADs? You always have to have a list of 4 or 5 people in your desk at all times for these situations. By the way, it's what makes the Kentucky situation complicated. You fire John Calipari, you need to know somebody's going to say yes. What any other question before we get out of here? Cal should go to Louisville. Listen, Ty Walker says Cal should go to Louisville. Credit to my guy, Mike Luke. He is an Arizona beat writer. I was on his podcast the other week, and he basically asked me, he's like, Torres, I got a Kentucky question for you. I got a Calipari question for you. And I was ready for just about anything. He goes, tell me why Louisville shouldn't try to hire John Calipari. And I was like, you're crazy. What do you? And then I was like, I don't know that that's the worst thing. I think I can't speak for Louisville fans. Maybe there's a few in the chat. I'm sure you'd love to have him. He'd certainly win at a higher level. I think that'd be interesting. I think if you're Josh Hurd, make the phone call. You want to come down here? You want to piss off all that Big Blue Nation? You want to prove to them that they're better without you? Come here, bring your recruits, just like when you went to Kentucky 13, 14 years ago. You brought all those Memphis guys, DeMarcus Cousins, Eric Bledsoe, eventually John Wall. That would be interesting, man. I think Josh Hurd should at least make the call, and Cal wants to get out. Cal in Kentucky is like Caleb. This is a great, great, great from Ted. Ted says, Cal in Kentucky is like Caleb Love in UNC, with Love maybe leading Arizona to a natty and UNC flourishing. Change of scenery, best for Kentucky and Cal. I think that's actually a perfect analogy. I can tell you, I know both sides of the Caleb Love story. North Carolina basically forced him out. Arizona welcomed him with open arms. And I'm here to tell you, the Arizona people love Caleb Love, no pun intended. And so it was clear that a change of scenery was just best for everybody. And so I do wonder if it'd be best for Calipari. I just don't know where he goes. Obviously, Louisville's the only real job that's open right now. I mean, I guess Washington's open. Other stuff is going to open. But West Virginia's filled. Ohio State's filled. Michigan's filled. I don't know where Cal's going to go. Is he going to go to Florida Atlantic? Like, I just don't know. We have overtime, by the way, with Houston and Texas A&M. Let's see what else here. Any other questions before we get out of here? By the way, I kind of want to stick around at the end of this game, but kind of want to just go watch the end of it. I don't think it's going to change too much of my coverage if Houston ends up losing this game. I'm telling you, Juwan Roberts is hurt. This was my whole thing with Houston in this tournament. It's why I picked Kentucky to win, honestly, in the Midwest, is because Juwan Roberts has been hurt. This poor kid is the heart and soul of this team, and he can't stay healthy. So Houston is up by 3 right now, 4:25 left in overtime. We got any more questions? Otherwise, I'm going to get out of here. Appreciate your support. By the way, we're going to have wall-to-wall coverage of the Calipari stuff. Knoxvillian says, I come from the future to say that Tennessee beats UConn for a national championship. Knoxvillian, here's my real question. Does Tennessee beat Purdue in the Elite Eight? You beat Purdue, you got Torres' attention. Because we're going to have some fun in those Twitter streets if Purdue loses to Tennessee. That was really where a lot of the Purdue narrative for me started, was if you watch that Tennessee game in the Maui Invitational, it was like, this ain't right. So Knoxvillian, I hope you're correct. I would be fascinated to see. But yeah, I should mention, we're going to have so much coverage this week. You know, listen, I'll say a couple things. One, I think the portal is about to get crazy over the next couple days. Remember, of the 68 teams that started this tournament, by the end of tonight, 68 minus 16 is 52 of those 68 teams will have been eliminated. lot of players going to be hitting the portal over the next couple of weeks. Make sure you're plugged in here. We're going to be doing portal updates basically every day. We'll probably do our Sweet 16 preview show on Tuesday night. I will be at the regionals on Thursday. Not going to lie. Uh-oh, Emmanuel Sharpe followed out for Houston. That's not a good sign. He is a very important piece to what they do. I will tell you, I'm going to be at the regionals on Wednesday, on Thursday. Kind of want to get back to watch that Illinois-Iowa State game. Kind of want to get back to watch that Illinois-Iowa State game. Tell you what, I think I'm going to go because I just want to catch the end of this game. So, yeah. Any final questions? I'll give you 30 seconds while I watch Houston, Texas A&M to drop your questions in the chat. Otherwise, we're going to go. As I always tell you, if you're not subscribed to the show, please make sure to do so. Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, Google Music, wherever you listen to podcasts, make sure you're subscribed. Make sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel. Click that subscribe button. As Jamal Shedd got fouled shooting a three, I'm so bad right now. This is awful radio. Make sure you're subscribed to the YouTube channel. Put on those alerts. We're closing out on 35,000 subscribers. This YouTube channel has been incredible. I'm so proud of how it's grown. By the way, shout out to all the people that were like, you're talking too much Kentucky this week. It's like, I'm sorry that the biggest program in college basketball might have a coaching change. Freaking forgive me, okay? So make sure you're subscribed on YouTube. Make sure that you're following on social media at @Aaron_Torres on Twitter, at @AaronTorresPod on Instagram, AaronTorresPodcastQuestions@gmail.com. And for anybody who stuck around for some Houston analysis, I just hope they win because I just want to go watch this game. So I'll tell you what, I think we're going to get out of here. Any last questions? I think that's it. Appreciate the live chat, which was humming tonight. And I think, you know, we had between Twitter and YouTube, thousands of people tune in. So thank you for your support. Time for me to get out of here. We will be back. Definitely have some clips going up tomorrow. So make sure you're subscribed. And of course, probably Tuesday night, we'll do another live show. Maybe tomorrow if there's news. All for tonight's show, though. Shout out to Torrent Craig. Shout out to Rachel, who hates my voice. Shout out to JJ Redick, you F-head. I will be back Tuesday night on the stream, but make sure you're subscribed to this YouTube channel. By the way, check out the Aaron Torres Pod merch store. Sell that sucker out. I'm trying to get rid of some of my merch. And I will be back Tuesday night. But make sure you're tuned in on the podcast all week long.